Hello, everyone. This is Dave Goulas, president of EasyDC 3PL, and thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast, where we spotlight small business owners, entrepreneurs, startup founders, and we have real conversations about their journey, what it's really like, and what they've learned along the way. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. I'm your host, Dave Goulas of EasyDC 3PL. And this week, my guest needs no introduction. He is the founder and host of one of the largest podcasts and long-running podcasts in our logistics industry, which is called The Logistics of Logistics, Joe Lynch. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you so much, Dave. That's very nice. Very nice. I always call that being freight famous, only famous among freight people. I did not coin that term. My friend Nate Schutz did.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. And this industry itself, right? A lot of people involved and have big followings. But yeah, like you said, right, it's very industry specific. And sometimes outside of that, maybe people don't know. But for those watching that may not know who you are, can you just give us your background and how the podcast came to be?
Yep. So I'm the host of the Logistics of Logistics podcast. I started that about 5.5 years ago. I started it off as just every once in a while. I was still doing consulting, I was doing training for some companies about, you know, logistics related stuff, sales related stuff. I was still doing a lot of consulting to large shippers, helping them select 3PLs. And then about the time of the pandemic, just the few months before the pandemic, my executive coach kind of made the point, you know, you seem to really enjoy the podcast. Why don't you make that your business? And I was like, because I make no money from it. She goes, well, why don't you figure that out? So I've kind of figured that out. But I had a long career before I started the podcast. I started my career in, we're both in Michigan. So I started in automotive a long time ago. My dad had a small engineering company. I went to work there and I was a designer, draftsman, I guess, in automotive. And then I became a design engineer, program manager. I launched cars all over the world. Spent a lot of time on the product development process. How do you make cars faster? You know, what I mean by that is the development process, not so much the plant. But then I did lean. I did a whole bunch of different things. And then in 08, 09, when everything melted down, I found myself unemployed. So I ended up at a little logistics company that needed a hand and fell in love with the biz. It was mostly less than truckload, but I loved it. And I thought I'll be here 18 months until automotive gets its act together. And I stayed. So I've stayed at that little logistics company for 5 years and I've been in the business ever since. And I started the Logistics of Logistics as a blog. So it was a blog. I was a writer, blogger for years before I started the podcast. So when people say, how'd you build that big audience? I was like, I had an audience from being a writer. I wrote 1,000 articles. So that's my long journey.
Okay. Yeah. And so you started off your career working at your dad's company. And I heard you on another show telling the story of how all of a sudden out of nowhere your dad had a heart attack and then you were thrust into having to run the company.
Yeah, it was a small company. My dad had a heart attack. And yes, I ran that company while my dad was, that was back in the olden days when like heart attacks were like, you were out of the office for a long time. So yeah, I ran my dad's company for a while. So my hair started going gray right then. Yeah. And then we ultimately did close my dad's business. And so it was a result of his health, but also the technologies were changing and we had to make massive investments in technology that none of our customers were willing to, like Ford Motor Company was not willing to guarantee us business. So I ended up working all over the place. I worked a lot Chrysler, a lot of Ford. I never worked for them. I worked in the large automotive supply chain, which we did not call a supply chain. We're suppliers.
Yeah, and growing up here in Michigan, right? I'm sure you saw the same thing. It's so heavily automotive focused. And I remember growing up, even just getting out of high school in those early years too, there was so many factories everywhere, and that's what so many people did. And it seemed like a decent blue collar career path that a lot of people took. But a lot changed, like you said, 2008, when had the financial crisis and all of them went bankrupt. So that was a major pivot for you in your career. Like, what was that time like when, I mean, it was pretty dark times,
Oh
right?
yeah, I will say I was never I never did the blue collar work. I wasn't I never worked in a factory. I worked in the automotive product development, and people always think of the factories as all the automotive, and that's the majority of work. But if you go in Detroit, and you know this as well as I do, there are massive buildings filled with engineers and draftsmen and technicians and all sorts of techs that help build those vehicles. And that time sucked for me because I was making good money and I had a good career. Now, I will say I was struggling with what was next for me. I wanted to do something entrepreneurial, but it's hard to do stuff that's entrepreneurial in automotive. I just couldn't see a path. I didn't see how am I going to get there. So when I lost my job, I was at a company that I hoped to buy someday, a little engineering company. And then I lost my job. I had hired there specifically to buy that company, and then all of a sudden I'm out, and it was because Chrysler didn't pay us. And then I had an expensive life. I was married, I had kids, and all of a sudden I was underemployed and unemployed for a minute. Never had gone through that where you're like, I'll just take any job. In fact, my move to logistics, it was like, this is not the kind of money I'm used to making. And I had an expensive life. And then unfortunately, I got separated and then divorced. And I was like, that was a big life change for me because I left this business I always knew and entered into logistics. It turned out to be the right thing. You know, that's, and you learn this in life is sometimes the bad things that happen in your life turn out to be okay and even great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure many can relate to this, even if you have a corporate job and you're making good money and there's, that aspect of course is good, but right, many people have, like you said, you had this urge, like you have an idea, you want to be an entrepreneur, but you don't exactly see how. And again, you have kids, you have family to take
Oh,
care
an
of,
expensive
obligations.
life. That's the problem. As soon as if you have the ability to go in and sit in an office and make really good money, it's hard to convince yourself, let alone your spouse, that, yeah, how about we make a lot less money and I do something that's might work or might not. It's a conversation that isn't always, I think most entrepreneurs have had that conversation, if not with themselves, certainly with their loved ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dave, I've thought about it also. At different points while I was trying to figure out what the logistics of logistics was going to be, every once in a while I'd think, you know, I could go be the vice president of some logistics company or vice president of some automotive company, some supplier somewhere, and make good money. And all I kept thinking is, and then one day I would be sitting in my office daydreaming of doing something on my own.
Yeah, and that's another great point too, is so many people that I've talked to or seen or heard stories about is that issue of regret, right? Like it's one thing to to make it through and to be okay financially, but so many people deal with that regret, like what if I started it, right? And what if it would have made it? And you never know unless you try, and sometimes you have to go through those tough times, those dark times. And it's not fun at the time, but like you said, it makes you stronger and it can be the right thing. But it's having the courage to really take that leap and go for it.
Oh yeah. And I had a buddy of mine say it to me a few years back. He goes, "You know what it all comes down to? The first 100 grand. Most of us can live on 100 grand, right? And if somebody just said, you have that first 100 grand, now go do something you really want to do, start a business, whatever it is that you want to do." And I was like, yeah, that's a good point. Because it's the going backwards when you start a business that's difficult.
Yeah, and I mean, I found, right, everything tends to be harder, take longer, be more expensive, and all sorts of unanticipated
All right.
problems come up that you didn't see and you have to deal with, right?
Oh yeah, and by the way, when you have kids, you're like, I don't ever want to say, oh yeah, I was starting a business when my kids were little and they went without whatever. And that, not like they're not going to eat, but you know, kids are expensive. So is being married, right? Life is expensive. And I kind of had all that. My kids were more or less grown when I started this, so I was able to support them through college.
Yeah, and I had a recent guest too. His name's Noah, but he's a serial entrepreneur and had some very nice exits at an early age. He's done well. But one thing he said the biggest recommendation I would give anyone is it's okay to start part-time. It's okay to build it on the side unless you have some big liquidity event or you know you're going to be insulated financially. I wouldn't quit your day
Oh
job.
yeah. I can agree with that. But you know, for me, I didn't really have the choice because I found myself kind of booted out of automotive for temporarily, like a lot of people at that time. But I started the logistics of logistics while I was running. I was the general manager, COO of a logistics company. I started the logistics of logistics as a blog. And it wasn't even a for-profit thing. I would just write and I got business that way. Being a blogger is now, it did cause a little problem at some point because the owner of the company thought that I was competing, but I was not competing. I was like, everything is about getting business to us, and that's how I. But I also owned the blog. I wasn't blogging on behalf of a company. I was blogging on behalf of myself. So I think in media age, I can start a YouTube channel today. I could start that today and have a day job, and you know, you don't want to get crosswise with your employer, but if you can say this is for the benefit of me, but also you, who cares?
Yeah, and I think that's easier now than ever
Oh
because
yeah.
like even like what my kids are younger and you know from 10 to 20 ages, but like I talk about that with other adults where it's such a radical difference. Like when they, you know, we didn't have internet growing up, we didn't have social media, we didn't have any of this. And now it's just normal where the kids are on social media and doing all this stuff and it's just part, you know, and they don't know anything else.
Yeah, it's easier now than ever before. And by the way, it used to be if you started a business, you had to have an office. It was unprofessional to say, oh, I'm working from my house or I'm working like now it's like nobody cares where you work from. Somebody says, I travel and I travel all over the world and I get your work done. Oh, cool. I don't care. The world's changed. The bar got a lot, the bar. It's gotten a lot easier to start a business and have a business, even on the side. I think starting it on the side is good. I would also suggest if you can start it young, before you have a lot of expenses, that's not a bad idea. But kids coming out with a lot of student loans probably don't feel like they're carefree and at that point. So.
Yeah. I mean, the earlier you can start, certainly the better, even if it is part-time. And one thing you touched on too is just doing the blog as a way to get business. And I realize this running the startup for the past year too is like, you know, I need to be the face of the company and I really need to be out there letting people know who I am and building my own personal brand, which is, you know, is a part of the company. How important do you think that is for founders or for entrepreneurs that are growing a business to really focus on their own personal brand?
I think it's important for sure. I would say though, you want to have that brand merged a little bit with your company because every once in a while I'll see people, and this gets a little challenging, I think, because if let's just say you and I work for somebody else right now, and you were spending a lot of time on LinkedIn building the Dave brand, and they're like, hey, what's this all about? And that can get them wondering, hey, is this about Dave or is this about our company? And if you say both, that's probably true, but that sometimes can upset people. Now, if you're going to exit a company and the whole brand is you, that might be a little difficult too. I will say though, LinkedIn, which we're all on, values individuals, not companies. So if you're going to post something on LinkedIn, post it through you, not through the company, because you have friends, your company doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I've benefited from having a personal brand, having the podcast, being a blogger. I built, I will also say I would say I built relationships. I got to know you. There, you just meet people by doing what we do. If you create content, you end up meeting people. And by the way, some of the people I met, all the other podcasters, all the other bloggers over time, you all kind of become part of this bigger club. Anybody who's an influencer. And again, these terms are a little cringy, but brand builders or creators or influencers, we put a name on something, but I think that one of the best parts of being those things is you get to meet a lot of great people.
For sure. For sure. You mentioned something there, relationship, and I'm curious to hear your experience. Because I'll just tell you mine. So I came from the pharmaceutical industry, was in there for a long time, and it's very transactional. It's very cutthroat on price. It's very like everyone's out for themselves. For the most part, there's not a lot of sharing and collaboration. It's very, you know what I mean? When I came over to logistics, it was a complete 180 from that. Like everyone collaborates, everyone's opening to share business or collaborate on business. And I was really pleasantly surprised after, you know, being in something else for so long. Like when you came over from automotive to logistics, was there a big difference in terms of like the relationship and how people do business?
Yeah, it was completely different space. First off, automotive is a very mature space and they're selling millions of units of something that costs $40,000. You'll never find operations that are run better than that. When I came to logistics, it was so fragmented. No one was using the technology to the same extent that they were using it in automotive. Very immature compared to automotive. But I love the fact that it was so entrepreneurial and so much opportunity for growth. And I think it is so much more freewheeling, and I do have great relationships. I'm not saying I didn't have great relationships in automotive. I did, but it tends to be with where you're at and the project you're on. Here, it just seems like everybody knows everybody, and it's and maybe it's the nature of the business. We all have to partner in this business. Dave, we've did something before we hit record. We were talking about this, the partnerships we have. Logistics, you can't go it alone for the most part. You always have partner carriers or warehousing guys. You're working with all sorts of people around the world, and those build relationships.
Yeah, and the way I actually met you is, and I looked this up prior to the show, it was last September of 2022. So we weren't even officially open. Right here at EZDC, we were just getting ready, getting everything. And I'm figuring out how I'm going to start marketing and getting customers. And I'm just trying to meet people. And someone said, well, you're in Michigan, you should talk to Joe Lynch. I said, oh, great. Who's Joe Lynch? And I looked you up and somehow I found your number. I think it was on the
website. It's online.
And so I called you. I called you and you picked up, you were on a walk. And I remember that and I just said, hey, I'm starting a 3PL. I heard you're in logistics, and you took like a half hour on the phone with me out of the blue and let me know about the industry, introduced me to numerous people, kind of gave me advice. And so like, have you always just been that, you know, willing to help somebody and collaborative, even, you know, for people you may not have a relationship or might not be big companies yet?
Well, I mentioned how I went through that time of unemployment and underemployment in 2008. That struck me to my core because I was mid-career. I had a very good career. I made very good money. To be in that place where you're like, what the hell am I doing? How am I going to make my payments on all this stuff I have? That's caught me by surprise. Not that I didn't think it could happen to me, but when you're wondering how you're going to make your next paycheck, you start going, oh man, next time somebody's looking for help, I'm going to give it. But I also, I would say, I got my master's degree in education geared towards consulting and training. I had the degree doesn't make me open to conversations, but I was interested in how can I help? So I've always thought that's a cool way to live.
Yeah. And, you know, I found that in my own life journey is particularly when you're going through the challenging times and the setbacks and sure. whatever type of adversity, sometimes the best thing you can do is just take, because you know how your mind is just going to just start beating up on you and all the negative thoughts pile on, is just to take the focus off yourself and get out there and help somebody else. And it's amazing what that can, you know, can do for your spirit and your well-being in general.
Yeah, Dave, it's funny. If somebody can make an introduction that leads you to a new job or a new customer, you'll never forget that. And I always think just those 15 minutes, a half hour. By the way, I always remember the first time I did get your call. I know exactly where I was at. I kind of go the same route where I walk in the neighborhood. And I remember exactly where I was at when you called. I was like, oh, this is weird. I think you have a 248 phone number. I was like, yeah, somebody local, somebody's calling me. So, it builds relationships. People don't forget that. And I think when you have a friend or family member who's unemployed, if everybody chips in 15 minutes, half an hour, let me introduce you to somebody. I know a gal over there. Let me introduce you to her. That can be the difference between them being unemployed for 6 months or 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And sometimes too, we all get so busy, right, and get caught up in our own stuff. But that's a great way to live, is just always being willing to pitch in and help however you can, even if it's just an introduction.
Right. Yeah. And I always say, you never look at it and go, oh, I hope Dave can pay me back because I spent some time with him. It's more like, pay it forward. That's kind of how I look at it, is this life is short.
Yeah, absolutely. And you never know too, right? What that can do for someone, and you know, the type of impact that can make in their life. And again, if it's something that you're able to do, it's definitely the right thing to do.
Yep.
So you started the podcast about 5.5 years ago. What was the trajectory like? Because I've read so much about, you know, it takes time. You're going to suck at first. It's a long grind. You got to stay consistent. Like, what was it like for you when you first were getting the podcast going?
I had been a blogger, so I knew that it was going to be a similar slog. And as a blogger, I wrote articles. And I remember the first article I wrote, it was about logistics quotes, not getting quotations, but like famous logistics quotes. And I put them on the internet. And I was just put on LinkedIn, put on my website, the logistics of logistics. And I kept thinking, oh man, this is not going to go over well. People are not going to appreciate my nonsense on the internet. And everyone's like, just kind of like a few likes, hey, I love this one. That's always been my favorite. Right. And I was like, oh, nobody hates me for that. And so I did that blogging. I had a day job. I was busy. So I did it when I did it. Sometimes some inspiration would hit and I would sit down and write. And I didn't do it as consistently as I should have. And even when I started the podcast, I wasn't consistent. And you always see with the content creators, we'll always say, you need to do it very consistently, release every Wednesday or release every Friday, but get on a cadence and don't break it. I didn't do that for the first few years of the podcast. So I'd have, you know, 2 days in a row and then none for 2 weeks. And a few years back, I started saying, okay, I'm going to do podcasts Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So I knew that there would be kind of a long slog to get acceptance, but I had already had a larger following because of the blog. So it kind of was able to build on that. But as far as getting what I felt comfortable with it, that's taken some time too. Even the video aspect of it, which is newer the last 2 years or so, that's been That's been tricky, you know, trying to get the camera right, trying to get the lighting right, all that. So it's been quite the challenge to get this going where it's supposed to be. And I think anybody who starts with a podcast or a blog or anything like this on the, especially because mostly it's on the side, who thinks that they're going to be good at it, they probably aren't. If they think that it's going to get them instant results, it's not. it could be a long time before anything happens. So you have to embrace the suck kind of and this. I've said this about the marketing, and I guess podcast is part of marketing. Marketing is like eating right and exercising every day. You don't see the results tomorrow or the next day or the next day. And someday you're not going to eat right. You're not going to work out. You still know that the long-term results are going to be there. So these are never, that's never the good news, is it? No one wants to lose 20 pounds over the course of 18 months. We want to do it in a month, right? With just taking a pill before we go to bed every night.
Yeah, and the way the world is, and especially with the marketing we're all inundated with, right? Everything seems to be about instant gratification and all those marketing messages that we're all bombarded with. But like you said, right, it's that consistency day in, day out, week in, week out, over a long period of time, which is going to create those lasting results and really solidify what you're doing.
I saw Gary Vaynerchuk, and he said, you know, if somebody says, I have a hack for you, a shortcut, they're lying. Don't pay attention. And I was like, there's some truth to that. Because if I said, hey, Dave, you got this new podcast, there's a hack here. And you're like, that's a scam. There's no hack.
Yeah, you absolutely have to put the work in. For sure. And, you know, like you said, it's just that doing it day in, day out, whether you feel like it or not, you know, or weekend, whatever the schedule is. You mentioned, too, you had a coach that basically recommended that you do this full time.
Yeah.
Was that something you'd been doing for a while, the executive coaching?
I do have an executive coach. Her name is Ann Holm. She's been on my podcast a few times. She's from Michigan too, but she lives up in Minneapolis area. And when I left automotive and I found myself at a little 3PL, unfortunately I was got separated and then divorced, and my kids were off to college. And so I was like, man, I'm like in a brand new world. And so I got an executive coach really just to say, okay, what should I be doing? So I always liked the idea of self-improvement. And Anne has been great. In fact, she's the one who said, you need to start blogging. And I was like, blogging for what? She said, because you said you don't want to make cold calls, but you're in sales. And she said, start blogging. So I start. And then she said, just call it the logistics of logistics, because you like to explain things. So I was like, okay. So I was like, I got a placeholder name. The logistics of logistics is a placeholder name. Then I called my brother-in-law and said, hey, I need a website. I was going to go with the logistics of logistics as a placeholder. He goes, oh, that's a great name. I was like, it's okay. It's okay for now. And then he goes, no, that's perfect. He goes, that domain is available. I was like, yeah, it's good for now. And then people kept saying, I love that name. And I, somewhere along the line, I was like, that is the right name. So what Ann Holm has been able to do for me is, she's not one of the coaches who says, I've already done this, I follow my career, I've had a successful career to do what I do. She's a speech pathologist by training. So she's a brain expert, worked with people who had brain injuries. And she used Myers-Briggs and a whole bunch of other tests like that, that tell you your personality type and then where your strengths and weaknesses are. And I think that has been really important to me, to understand where my strengths are, where my weaknesses are, because you don't want to. So we just talked about doing a podcast. Is a podcast for everybody? No, it's not. Maybe you're more cut out to do memes. Maybe you're the guy who's better on just doing phone calls. Maybe you say, I don't even want to be on the sales side. I found out I'm very analytical. And once I'm doing it, I feel like I'm in the zone. For a long time, I had on my resume when I was an engineer, detail-oriented and analytical. I wasn't necessarily those things, but that's what people were looking for in engineers. That's like, that stuff bores me. So I would say what I got from my executive coach was where my strengths are, where my weaknesses are, where my pitfalls are, and how to avoid them. It's not perfect, but it's a good start.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I'm actually in the middle of writing a piece for someone else. And long story, but one of the topics is about, like, for young people and whatnot, is how important it is to really know yourself, like when you're getting out there in your career, and not necessarily what other people say about you, but really getting taking time within yourself to understand, what do I like? Where are my strengths? What do I seem to be naturally good at? What brings me joy? What gets me in flow? I mean, how important, because I see a lot of people that maybe look like they've just somehow gotten a situation where they're not in the right job or career, and it's just not working. Like, how important do you think that is for people to really take time and get to know themselves when they're getting out there in the workforce and deciding what they want to do?
Well, again, it's somewhat part of my personality type to say this, but I do think that's critically important. And I worked, and there's a lot of people my age whose parents were like, go into this career because it pays well. Be a lawyer, be a doctor, be an engineer because it pays well. And it did. I got paid well when I worked in engineering. It wasn't my gift. And what I started to realize is I was going to engineering school still at night. I already had my undergrad in business. And I realized the engineers I worked with, the very best ones, were renovating a house. And they love that. And they build their own computers. And they say, oh, I bought a 57 Chevy, and I'm going to redo it. And I was like, oh, none of those things interest me. I like the Wall Street Journal. I like to self-help books. I didn't care about stuff. I cared more about the people side. So I did feel like, yeah, the best engineers are going to be into things. That wasn't me. So I switched out of engineering, got my master's in education geared towards consulting and training, which better fit me. So I think you have to figure out what you're good at. And we don't do enough of that, especially for kids. Figure out what your strengths are, figure out what your weaknesses are. And for God's sakes, don't go into something just for the money, because you'll never be, if it's not what you're supposed to be doing, you'll never be good at it.
Yeah. And you won't be happy either, right? Like the money may, if you, you know, you get in it for the money and you get the money, it might, you know, pacify that for a little while, but ultimately you won't be fulfilled and you won't be really living on purpose and using your gifts.
Right. And when I was in engineering, I did well, but it was always because I was the one who was willing to do more of the people oriented stuff. So I would move into program management. And I remember some of my engineer friends go, dude, how many meetings do you go to every day? I was like, I don't know. 5 or 6. They're like, I would kill myself if I had to go to 6 meetings today. I was like, yeah, but that was good for me. Bill Gates said this one time. Bill Gates was this, I don't know if he's had this title, but he was the chief technical officer of Microsoft for a long time. Then he becomes the CEO as the company gets big. And he said, I was working 10 hours a day as the CEO and hating life. And he said, absolutely hating it. And he says, then he promotes Ballmer to CEO and puts himself back in the CTO spot. And he goes, then I'm working 12, 14 hours a day and I'm wired and excited about life again. And because he wanted to be with the product, he wanted to be with the technical people. It's a lot to be learned.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know about it, you, I suspect the same thing, but I've known, you know, I started this podcast a couple months ago and I kind of looked up and figured out how I did so many episodes so quickly. But I realized too, that even the part I do is just the interacting, the booking the guests, having the interviews actually gives me energy. And it doesn't really feel, even though it's work technically, and it takes time, doesn't really feel like work. Got to imagine, is that the same for you with your podcast?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I would say, Dave, is just, but the cool thing about my podcast, the cool thing about your podcast is you get to talk to people, learn their story. I've talked to a lot of very successful people. At some point, you're going to come on my podcast. We get to talk to very interesting people. And, you know, they say you become kind of the 5 to 7 people you hang out with. I hang out with really smart people 3 days a week on my podcast, people who are living their dreams. And not to say their life is perfect, but it's, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you want to talk to other entrepreneurs. And by the way, I don't have just entrepreneurs in my podcast. I don't even think that's, it should be everybody's goal. If you don't want to do that, don't do that. I talk to a lot of smart people who are not entrepreneurs. They, you know, the CEOs or the technical guys, sales guys, who cares? There's a lot of very interesting people out there, and you want to hang out with them. That's how you become one of them.
Yeah. And part of my motivation too, for starting this, was I had so many conversations, whether it was like in these shows with the Startup Zones or other people that I connected with like you, where you might think it's one way from the outside, but then you talk to them and you really hear their story and what they went through. And you just learn so much, gives you ideas, inspiration. And there's just something about that connection and sharing information with another person that's going through something similar that just seems to help and teach you so much.
I what I always kind of amazed by is you see successful people on LinkedIn and you go, oh, look at this LinkedIn profile, and it's so cool. And then you get them on your podcast and they talk about this failure, that failure. I got fired from this job. And you start to realize, oh yeah, we're all going through the same thing. And I think you'll see a lot of the very successful people, they just kept going. They just kept going. They weren't embarrassed or they didn't step back and say, oh, I'm just going to go and get an easy job that I'll never get fired from. They said, I'm going to keep pushing. And, you know, they kept moving. And I also say what I want to do on my podcast is I want to tell everybody's story. There's people who have done really well for themselves that we can all learn from, who are so busy grinding day to day, and we can all learn from them. So if I can get them on my podcast or you can get them on your podcast, who knows what little spark that somebody learns from you, your podcast or mine, and where they say, oh my God, I heard somebody talk and it just helped something click in my brain.
Yeah. And I've certainly had those moments where I'll be listening to, whether it's a podcast or an interview or someone says something, right? And I'm more auditory by nature in terms of learning, but sometimes, and so I tend to remember conversations more so than stuff I've read too. But sometimes someone will say something, and whether it's a story or a piece of advice they're given, but like you said, something will click. And that sometimes can be the difference or the catalyst to a shift, a pivot, a breakthrough, whatever it may be.
I think one of my daughters listens to tons of audiobooks. I listen to a lot, but nowhere near what she does. And she said that she had read a stat or a fact, whatever, that we as humans do better with sound and stories. We know stories resonate better with humans because that's how we evolved, hearing stories from our elders, right? We do better listening than reading. And so I always used to read a lot of books. Now I listen to books. And some people say, oh, that doesn't work for me. Well, we're more, humans are better at listening than reading. And I think we're also more likely to listen to somebody who's telling a story. And that's, again, I always try and get that from my guests. If somebody can tell a story, you can kind of go, oh yeah, I get that guy. He told a story that tells me who he is. And my goal on my podcast is, you're on my podcast, Dave. I want my audience to get to know, like, and trust you. And then I want them to see you as the recognized industry expert in what you do. I want them to see you as the solution to their problems. And then at the end, we'll plug, plug, plug. So if they get to know, like, and trust you, and then see you as that recognized industry expert. And then at the end, we tell them how they reach out. Hopefully that works.
It's a great formula for sure. And like I heard you talk about this on another show where as the host, right, it's not about you, it's about the guests. And you kind of attributed your success. It's not so much me, but it's like my ability to connect with and get all these wonderful guests to engage and come on my show and tell their story. And that's been like the formula for success.
Yeah, it's funny because when you start a podcast, you're like, my first podcast was with Steve Elwell, a good buddy of mine. And I introduced you to Steve, so you know Steve. And he's like, he's a friend. So he's like, yeah, I'll be on your stupid podcast. And then at some point when I was like, I'm going to ask this guy to be on my podcast. And I was like, probably say no. And then the guy's like, yeah, sure. You're like, oh, wait a sec. I've got good people on my podcast. And when I say good people, I mean, well-known people. And that has been a revelation, but I think it always is about my guests. If I can get good guests to tell their story, share their expertise, I win. And hopefully my audience wins. Because we face it, people listening to Logistics or many other podcasts, they're listening to learn. They aren't listening for entertainment. I'm not a comedian. I'm not just a storyteller.
Sure. And in today's world too, right? It's so busy. We're dealing with so much change, pressure, family, kid, right? Like sometimes too, even if it's 10 minutes, 20 minutes on a commute or on a walk or whatever, if you can listen to something valuable and that gives you information or an idea or whatever it may be, like you said, the audience wins unless you win.
Yep. Yep. Well, I would say when I think about my podcast and the same with yours, if you don't do something that your listeners want to listen to, you fail. But also if there's nothing in it for the guest, then they fail. So if I was on this podcast, and of course I wouldn't say this, but if I was on this podcast, go, that was a waste of my time. It's boring to talk to Dave. I feel like I came off stupid. Hopefully I don't. Then there's nothing in it for me. So my goal is for my guests to get some business or at least gain some favorable attention. And my audience, hopefully they learn something. They glean some information from it.
Yeah, very true. So we've got 2024 right around the corner. And your show is, you know, bigger than ever. What are you most excited about coming up in the next 12 months?
Well, I'm hoping we kind of get past this freight recession for one. I'm also interested in building more of a media company. And when I say media, I've started this as a podcast. Well, I started as the logistics as a blog, and then I got into podcasting. I want to kind of build more of a media company where it's the website, which is good, not great. By the way, I have a great website, guys. It's me who's not making it great. I want to get the YouTube channel going better. I always want to grow my podcast audience. I want to get better at what I'm doing. And I think I'm also considering some other formats for the podcast. So I'm going to continue doing the logistics of logistics, but I might do another type of, because mine is all about kind of long form, 45 minutes. So I'm thinking, you know, can I do more that is video oriented, you know, YouTube first? Because my podcast is podcast first and then go YouTube second. I could do something that is more YouTube first, podcast second, if you understand what I'm trying to say there. So I'm interested in keep growing the logistics of logistics because I love what I'm doing. And it's funny, I was just talking to some buddies and they're like, yeah, I think I'm going to retire in this year, that year. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, what about you, Joe? I was like, I like what I'm doing, man. I don't want to stop. I'm not old enough to retire, by the way.
Yeah. And you know, that whole concept too, right? Like it's one thing to, you know, obviously you want to be secure and all that in your older years too. But if you're having fun and you're being productive and you're doing meaningful work that helps other people, why would you stop?
My executive coach, Anne, says, don't retire. She says that to all of her clients. She says that we're not built for it. And she said something to me I thought was very interesting. She said, humans, especially men, we've been doing this for a long time. We find a problem, we solve the problem, we get the reward. And the problem is when you retire, you go, oh, okay, what's the new problem? Well, I don't have one. All right. Now, you and I are not doing the same work that our grandparents and great grandparents did. They did more likely did manual labor that was backbreaking, that was tiring. At the end of, and when they were 60 years old, they were toast. You and I, we click computers all day. The only thing that's going to make us sick is if we don't go to the gym or go for a walk. So no reason to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So after hearing this, if people don't know who you are, they want to reach out and learn more. What's the best way for people to reach out and engage with you and get in touch?
Well, LinkedIn. So there's a million Joe Lynch's, but I'm the only Joe Lynch at the Logistics of Logistics. You can reach out through my website on LinkedIn. I'm connected, everybody on LinkedIn, and check out my podcast. And again, it's the Logistics of Logistics .com. And what I do is I interview logistics, supply chain, transportation, warehousing people. And my goal is for my audience to learn something from those experts. And hopefully those experts also get some business from being on my podcast.
All right. Yeah. And listen, you've been doing a great job. You've been doing it for several years now. It's bigger than ever. You have a big audience and a lot of people tune in and get value from it every week. So you're certainly doing something right. So yeah, for sure. Check Joe out. And again, thank you so much for being here and being on the show. I really appreciate it. And best of luck with everything that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Dave. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving. That's all the time we have this week. We will see you next time. All right. Hello again. Dave Goulas here. Thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. If you like what you heard on today's episode and you got value from it, please click the link below to subscribe so you'll be notified of future episodes when they drop. If you would like to be a guest on a future show, you can also click the link below, or you can email us at info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. That's info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.